As I mentioned in a service some months ago, I have long ties with Turkey. My personal relationships bring the recent violence very much home for me. So I spoke about my Turkey work previously. Let me just say now that I know the country very well, and I have many close friends as well as close professional colleagues there. I have no friends who are religious fundamentalists. Most of my friends are relaxed Muslims that are very progressive socially and quite liberal or non-believers. My friends are people who believe in helping others through NGOs or through the Turkish government. When the Erdogan government came to power in 2002, there were many warnings that his party, the AKP, or Justice and Development Party, would try to make Turkey into a caliphate, turning against its resolutely secular government that Ataturk had established in 1923. But the AKP was very clever. They lulled my suspicions and the suspicions of many others in Turkey and abroad. Since 2002, gradually but persistently, the AKP party has become increasingly autocratic and anti-democratic. Turkey is now rated 151 out of 180 countries in the world on freedom of speech, according to the group Reporters Without Borders. The AKP government has arrested and imprisoned many journalists and shut down independent media, including the largest daily newspaper. Many journalists have been murdered without their killers being identified. The program to help poor kids that I was so proud of has been eviscerated. Now people are told that they get the money from the AKP party, and if they don't vote for Erdogan, their cash transfer will be cut off. Academics who sign peace petitions are fired. As a matter of fact, on Friday, when the attempted coup was happening, my husband and I had dinner with at the Turkish restaurant's new location downtown, adjacent to the Glass House on the corner of South and 2nd Street Southeast. He was in the U.S. because his PhD is from UVA's Department of Politics. He came to the U.S. to research and renew his scholarly contracts after he was fired from his university for signing a peace petition. He correctly told us that the coup would fail, and he predicted that things would become even worse in Turkey, as Erdogan will use the failed coup as an excuse to crack down on liberals even more. Let me share with you an email from a feminist friend of mine in Turkey who replied to my email asking her to check in as follows. Hi, dear Janine. How are you, Vivian Kelly? Thank you for your email. Turkey is like hell. I moved to Istanbul from Izmir to work. I do not work as a tour guide anymore after all the terroristic attacks. I work in one of the local NGOs devoted to helping refugees. Until last night, I said I was safe and had hope for the future. No, not anymore. Please share with your friends and your relatives that here in Turkey, people who want peace or who are anti-militaristic or against state fundamentalist ISIS can be killed. Me, as a feminist, activist, or just a person, survived the Ankara attack in October. This is when a peace rally was suicide bombed and 103 people were killed. My friends were killed. Last night, crazy people who support Erdogan, the president, were out in the streets and they killed innocent soldiers. A few soldiers were just boys. All night we heard in Istanbul, Kadıköy neighborhood, thousands of people in the streets were yelling, "God is great, God is great," all night long. I have started searching the ways to flee from Turkey. I don't want to live with those fundamentalist Islamicist stupid people. Turkey will become like Syria or other Middle Eastern countries because of Erdogan and his supporters, and the EU, the gun lobby, big companies. What a shame. Please forgive me that I talked all terrible things, but you know we are told not the truth by media and press. I and we need your support for truth. All the best. Love. physically apart from Turkey, but I am very much a part of what is happening there via my close friendships. A friend was to fly out of Ataturk Airport to China on Friday and was trapped in the airport. She's now on her way to her hometown to be with family instead of her business trip. Of my two closest friends, one was out of the country for vacation, and the other managed to email me yesterday morning. I'm still reeling to even think of how many friends I am waiting to hear from. I know so many people there so well because I worked for so long. Yasutani Roshi, a Zen master, born in 1885 and died in 1973, said, "The fundamental delusion of humanity is to suppose that I am here and you are out there." For the many, many humanists under siege in Turkey, I ask you to please pray or send positive energy as your beliefs allow. For me, I'll keep watching the email and Facebook, as not every friend I've emailed has replied to or checked in, apart from yet a part of Turkey and the rest of the world.
Thanks. My mom would have said that the sermon I wrote for this morning was too clever by half. It was so clever, if I do say so myself, that it was almost cute. And cute and clever aren't what we need right now. A lot has been happening since I was in this pulpit last. There have been good things, of course. Babies born, jobs secured, marriages begun, and 1,001 everyday miracles. But there was also the July 6th murder, I know of no other word for it, of Philando Castile in a suburb of St. Paul, Minnesota, and the murder of Alton Sterling just 2 days before in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, both at the hands of police officers in situations that I feel certain would not have led to the shootings of these men had they been white. At the end of that week, at the end of a peaceful protest of these shootings, a man opened fire and shot 14 police officers, killing 5 of them. It's reported that he was intentionally targeting the police, and more specifically, that he had wanted to kill white police officers. Beyond our borders, there was the attack in Nice, France, on Bastille Day, in which a man drove a truck into a crowd, killing 84. And just 2 days ago, 161 people were killed and another 1,400 were injured in the attempted coup in Turkey that Janine was just talking about. And that's just the last 2 weeks. I think the technical and appropriate theological term is, what the hell? Oh, there have been 1,001 everyday miracles in that time, to be sure, but these concentrated horrors do not cry out for clever and cute. At least not a whole sermon of it. I recently saw a quote which said, "Things are not getting worse, they are getting uncovered. We must hold each other tight and continue to pull back the veil." Things are not getting worse, they're getting uncovered. Maybe that's true. Maybe things aren't really getting worse, they're just getting more publicity. Certainly, there has always been wars and rumors of wars, as the author of the New Testament book of Matthew put it. Nothing new there. And the killing of innocent black men and women under the guise of protecting law and order? Well, lynchings come to mind, as do the slave owners' whips. Nothing new, just more clearly seen. If you have ever experienced the death of someone, you know what that's like. If you have ever experienced the pain of the death of someone you loved, someone close to you, then you know how devastating it can be. Philando Castile had people who loved him, who are today devastated. So too did Alton Sterling. And Edward Sotomayor Jr. and Peter Gonzalez Cruz and Mercedes Marisol Flores and Amanda Alivar and officers Brent Thompson and Patrick Zamarripa and Veronique Leon and Francis Christian Locatelli and all of those killed in Turkey during the coup, each of those people had family and friends and co-workers who were victims too. They are a part of what happened, and in no way apart from it. And there are those who have partners or children or friends or who are themselves Latino or gay or black, and while they may not have known any of these victims personally, these events have hit very close to home for them. There are these concentric circles that are never reckoned in the casualty count. And far too often, the outermost ring is where you'll find straight, cisgendered, well-educated, and financially secure people, like most of us. There are exceptions, of course, exceptions both of those who call this community home and who do not fit into any of those generalized and generalizing stereotypes, as well as those who do have also a personal connection, as that which made Janine feel the need to speak. In that innermost ring, you are unquestionably a part of it. In the outermost ring, no matter how much empathy we may feel, we are in so many ways apart from it. My two boys are multiracial. One looks like his Scotch-Irish birth mother, and the other his East Indian Trinidadian birth mother. But together, they have the blood of Haiti and Africa and the Cherokee Nation flowing through their veins. And so a lot of what is happening is coming closer to my home than maybe for many. I know that one of my boys will be able to drive just about anywhere he likes without a police officer wondering why he's there. And that the other is likely to be pulled over many times and might be arrested or worse just because of what he looks like. Yet even with that, let me call it, familial connection to these events, I was raised white, and I lived white, and I am enough apart from, or able to make myself feel apart from, that I could unconsciously distance myself from it and think that what we needed this morning was clever and cute. A little while ago, Janine read from the Tao of Physics about how Friedhof Capra had the experience, the actual embodied experience of what he had known for so long, that everything is just molecules and atoms vibrating at different frequencies. It put me in mind of the TED Talk I've heard by Jill Bolt Taylor, the neuroanatomist, who has talked and written about her experiences while having and then recovering from a stroke. There was a time, she has said, when she was unable to self-differentiate, so that, for instance, when she put her hand on a table, she could not tell where her hand stopped and the table began. She saw only that swirling, vibrating dance of molecules and atoms. The idea that we are all connected, not only to each other, but to everything that is in the cosmos, isn't just a nice metaphor. It's a literal description of the way things are. That there are separations between and among things is the fantasy. As Jeanine quoted Getsutami Roshi, the fundamental delusion of humanity is to suppose that I am here and you are out there. There's an Aboriginal Australian artist, activist, and academic named Lilla Watson, who said, if you have come to help me, you are wasting your time. But if you have come because your liberation is bound up with mine, then let us work together. If you have come to help me, you are wasting your time. But if you have come because your liberation is bound up with mine, then let us work together. I take this to mean that if we try to make a difference because from our vantage point out here, we can see that there are things to be done in there, then we are wasting our time. We will be maintaining our position apart from. And that's just not gonna cut it. But if we try to make a difference because we realize that we have to stop these acts of unconscionable, inhuman brutality because we are harmed by them too, because we are their victims too, because our lives are not just disturbed by but flat out devastated by them, because we have been able to collapse the circles so that there is no longer an outermost and innermost circle, but simply one circle. If we are involved because we realize that, then there is hope. Not a guarantee, but hope. This is the point where you hope I'm going to tell you what to do. The point where you hope I'm going to explain how we're going to accomplish all of this, or perhaps you're afraid that I'm going to. I wish I could. I don't even know how I should go about moving ever closer to that painful, frightening, devastating center, much less how any of you are going to do it. But the Venerable Thich Nhat Hanh has a suggestion. The Order of Interbeing, which he founded, has outlined 14 precepts of engaged Buddhism. The fourth is this: do not avoid suffering, or close your eyes before suffering. Do not lose awareness of the existence of suffering in the life of the world. Find ways to be with those who are suffering, including personal contact, visits, images, and sounds. By such means, awaken yourself and others to the reality of suffering in the world. Do not avoid suffering or close your eyes before it. So much easier said than done, isn't it? Many of us, and I dare say most of us, are well practiced in the arts of avoiding suffering and closing our eyes to it. After all, it's discomforting. It's overwhelming. It's just too painful. Yes. Yes, it is. But Patrick Zamarripa's brother has to face it. Why shouldn't we? Philando Castile's girlfriend and her 4-year-old daughter have to endure it. Why shouldn't we? The families and friends of every one of these victims and the countless others who have gone unnamed and unknown except by those family and friends, they must live with this for the rest of their lives. How can we not? It will be hard, but we're not alone. We have each other. It will be exhausting, and it's okay, even essential, that we continue to see those 101 everyday miracles that will continue undeterred, because we need that respite. It will change how we see the world and how we live in it. Well, that's sort of the point, isn't it? Because the change will be a result of realizing, not just knowing in our heads, but having the embodied experience that we are all connected. And that our liberation, our peace, our happiness, our security, our humanity are intimately tied up in everyone else's, everything else's. And perhaps most especially with those for whom liberation, peace, happiness, security, and the acknowledgement of their full humanity is not as secure as ours. This isn't easy. It will be hard. There are real losses involved. But this is the only way that there is any hope for any